Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm Grant Spanier.
And I'm Vince Cochi.
And you are listening to episode 75. We are 3/4 of the way to 100.
Holy moly.
Man, what a year. What a year of eps. It's been a good one.
It's been a great
one. A great year, and also a lot of great eps, greps.
Truly, truly they have been greps. And it's been a really exciting season two of 10,000 Hours. We're in the home stretch now. And we had a great episode 75. No better guest for it. We talked to Tobias von Schneider.
And if you can guess from the name, we had another excellent accent on the show.
In our proud history of great accents.
We should do a super cut of just like good accent moments.
And a super cut of all the time with these great guests we've wasted.
Acknowledging their accent and like fawning over it and kind of making them uncomfortable.
Precisely, yeah.
That's maybe a bit, not racist. What's the term I'm looking for here?
Insensitive?
Just like insensitive?
Generally insensitive, yeah.
We're like looking at them like zoo animals. Like, hey, you have an accent.
And like trying to imitate it usually.
Anyway, Tobias, fucking great guest, yeah?
Yeah, formerly of Spotify. He's a designer, an entrepreneur, just a creative mind in general. And we talked about leading and leadership.
Great beard.
Oh, and a top-notch beard, a leader in the beard community, and a leader in the creative community. We talked about kind of the opportunities and the challenges that come with leadership and what it means to be a leader.
Yeah, super generous guy, super kind and cool.
And very interesting.
And I love his work. I feel like for best context, one should go to his site. We'll show notes that. I think it's just to vanschneider.com, something, whatever. Regardless. What are sites built on, Vince? On the internet. And, you know, some sites use some services. I think actually we talked about this on the episode a little bit because he has a sort of a different tool that's in a different sphere. But many thanks to this episode's sponsor, Squarespace. I'm a huge fan.
And a huge user.
And a huge user. In particular, this site, 10,000 Hours website, is built on that, as are many of my other sites, greenroommagazine.com, eggmusic.com, egg-music. I built those. It's a fantastic tool. I'm such a fan. It really just makes it easy for you to have a beautiful website.
Not only is the barrier of entry really low, but the quality is very high. And it's basically everything you need.
It really is. So I often, you know, people ask us about starting podcasts. They ask us about, you know, like other creative endeavors. Whenever it's a website related question, I kind of chuckle and it's like, yeah, go get Squarespace. That's going to make your life so much easier and it's going to be really great.
Absolutely.
And if you are interested in that and want to save a little money, use the code 10,000 hours. It's all one word. I think it's all caps. I don't know if it's cap sensitive. I think it might be.
I think it might be, just to be safe.
So there's a 1-1.
It goes 1.
And then 4 0s
after. 0 0 0 0.
0 0 0 0. And then HOURS, 10,000 hours on Squarespace. Thank you for sponsoring Squarespace.
And thank you, Tobias von Schneider, for joining us for a wonderful episode 75. Thank you, listeners, as always. We hope you enjoy it too. Leading. At the sounds of the savannah now.
Yeah, we're traveling the world in our pre-show portion there.
Whale song incoming.
Nice, we're sick. Just a question for you.
Yeah, please.
You're about to break that sign. I could just see it. Well, I can physically see it. I'm sitting right next to you.
Classic 10K HRS sight gag.
Yeah, we love them. Vinny, so I have just one question.
Yes, please.
And if
please.
You could answer it in order. the deep reference to the end of the show. If you could tell me, what are you putting in your time? What are you putting your time into right now? What are you working on?
I am busy working at work, pitch season, lots of pitches. I think I'm on no fewer than 4 as we speak. And Boy, howdy, does that take a lot of time and resources.
Howdy, what is that?
That's an underrepresented phrase in the industry and at large, I think. So it's really fun stuff. You know, pitch work is kind of like the most exciting work you do at an agency, at least in my opinion.
And simultaneously disheartening.
Oh, it can certainly deal a crushing blow to your ego, your confidence, and your will to live. But it is also kind of invigorating. So it's been keeping me busy.
Well, good luck. Please report back in detail how each pitch goes.
Hey, I'll be happy to brag about the wins when they come, when they become public.
Yeah.
Grant, what have you been putting your time into recently?
Mostly, so a couple design, a couple identity projects, cutting some video, and taking some photographs. Perhaps a bit sultrier, if I may use the term, or a bit more expressive.
I think those are very good political ways to describe them. Yeah, yeah. They're evocative photography.
Yeah, exploring some more like kind of body, like, I mean, specifically like female stuff right now. And it's been really interesting. So just kind of seeing where that goes. And I'm about to hop on a flight to San Diego, going to meet a friend of the show, oft-show noted David Sheridan.
Yeah. He makes it in no fewer than 60% of all show notes references.
Meeting him in San Diego, and then going to go represent Green Room Magazine at Crossed Festival. Got a really great lineup. I'm like really looking forward to that.
That's sensational.
Yeah, excited. Get away from this impending cold of Minnesota.
It is starting to chill a bit. Broke out the jacket.
That. It's your favorite season.
I do love the fall. Hate the winter, though.
I believe our guest today has been a bit on the road as well. I think he just got back to New York. And man, I am super excited to have this guy. I've been following his work, I feel like maybe like 6 months now, maybe something like that. And I was like, immediately, like, wow, this guy's doing some dope stuff. He's like on the level. I think I found him because he was art director, designer, I think design lead at Spotify. I think that's how I originally came across him. And then I started digging into his other work, and I dug into this thing called Semplice, which is really this interesting tool. I'm sure he'll riff on, but this interesting tool, especially for like creatives to kind of display their work as a portfolio. And then I really got into his, he's got these playlists he puts together, these kind of creative mixes, and he's got this newsletter I'm following along. He's actually like very much inspiring some of the stuff I'm into right now. So welcome to the show, Mr. Tobias Van Schneider.
Hey, thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
To have you. welcome. 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 So I guess perhaps I can do the honors this week, Vince.
Please do.
Mr. Van Schneider, is that the right way to say it?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, because I was like, oh, is it Tobias Van or is it Tobias Van Schneider? You know what I mean? It's an interesting question. Okay.
Yeah, it's Tobias. Tobias Van Schneider. Well, that's the...
Tobias.
Tobias is the European version of it, but American pronunciation, Tobias, is totally fine too.
Well, we like to try to be authentic on the show.
as best we can.
Tobias Van Schneider it is.
Tobias.
Yeah, lovely. That's correct.
So could you tell us, what are you putting your time into right now? What are you working on?
Wow, that's a loaded question.
I mean, yeah.
It doesn't have to be.
What do I put my time in? You mentioned a few things already. I'm one of those people who just works on a ton of different projects. I have the same sort of like the same philosophy of similar to how I read a book. I just read, you know, three or five. So when I get bored with one, I just can put it down and I continue on the other. Projects that I put most of my time in right now is the one that you already mentioned is called Semplice, which is a portfolio tool. It has been a side project for about a year now. We launched it a year ago. Been working on it for more than 2 years, and it has been grown to a certain degree where I just have to put in more time.
Cool. I mean, I would recommend that anyone listening go check that out. What's the URL for that?
It's semplicelabs.com.
Yeah. It's cool. A really dope tool. Like, I was very close to pulling the trigger on using it. Maybe next time around.
Yeah, it's a completely different take on portfolio systems. When you look at all the other existing ones right now that are more following the, you know, the subscription model, mm-hmm. And template based model, Semplice is exactly the opposite, not subscription based and not really a template system, I would say.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more for, that's why we've always been targeting it at the creative professional.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it targets a specific niche, would say.
Yeah,
so
it definitely differentiates. We love Squarespace. They're like a sponsor of the show, and we use that for our site. But I feel like, to me, when I look at those two, I feel like, oh, okay, I see Squarespace as this sort of more mass market, like anyone can use it, WYSIWYG. Whereas I see Simplice as like, oh, yes, this is like, if you really want to elevate it, you really want to differentiate, it's kind of got all the tools there for you.
Absolutely, yeah. It's definitely two different things if you look at Squarespace or Simplice. Absolutely.
Sure. Awesome. Well, that's really exciting.
So that's congratulations. Yeah, that's thank you.
Yeah.
that's one of the biggest projects that I'm investing a lot of time in right now. But then, as you've already mentioned, I love taking pictures. So I'm very active. Try to be very active on Instagram.
Yeah, we'll show notes that. You take some awesome photos.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm trying. I do these things, and I do my weekly email list, which forces me to write a little bit more, publish articles on Medium as well. And then I work on a bunch of other tiny little projects, ranging from apps to doing advisory work for other startups. We can get more into detail about that later if we want.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, I think the topic that we're talking about will naturally lend itself to those conversations.
Absolutely, yeah.
And Vince, what are we talking about this week?
Well, Grant, I'm glad you asked. So you mentioned that you have your hands in a lot of different projects, and I don't think that's something that's a foreign concept to us here on the show. A lot of our guests are the same way. Yeah,
I think that's why I was so attracted to what he's doing.
Absolutely. But what we're talking about today is kind of more of a holistic role that you play across projects, maybe in a community, maybe in the creative sphere in general, and that's leading and being a leader. And whether that's a thought leader or in a more pragmatic sense, the actual driving force behind a project, it comes with its own hurdles and obstacles and rewards. And so we wanted to sit down today with you and talk to you about that role that you've played probably many times in the projects that you've done.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yes. So I'm curious, like, obviously you were probably doing some of that at Spotify, but how is that... Well, okay, actually, maybe if we could take a step back. Maybe we take a step back and just dig into your backstory a little bit. You know,
sure.
How did you end up in New York where you are now? You're originally from Germany, yeah?
Yeah, I'm originally born in Germany, grew up in Austria, which is right below Germany.
Yep.
A lot of people don't know, so I'm always mentioning that.
Vince keeps me educated.
I studied in Berlin for 6 months. But
oh, then you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of the few Americans that do. Yeah.
There's very few. You know, I just want one little thing. Usually when people ask me where I'm from and I say Austria, one of the responses I've been getting a lot is, oh, I love kangaroos. And I'm like, no.
No.
No. Why?
Did I?
That's the wrong Austria, you know?
Not that far south.
The one in Europe.
Yeah.
So born in Germany, grew up in Austria, briefly lived in Stockholm in Sweden, and then ultimately went to New York. That was about 5 years ago.
Cool.
So still fairly fresh.
And what incited that?
There's no particular reason. I wish I would have a very crazy story about that. I used to have my own design studio in Austria, and so long story short, and I got a little bit bored of that, and I wanted to try something different. So I essentially sold everything, I put everything down, and I have never been to New York, so I went to New York in order to do a sabbatical, sort of like a vacation sabbatical, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
And I stayed in New York for, I tried to extend my stay as long as legally possible, which ended up being 6 months.
Whoa.
And after that, I went back to Austria. I found myself to not have an apartment anymore, obviously, because I sold everything. And so the question was, what am I going to do? You know, am I going to search for a new apartment, you know, buy furniture and start over the whole thing? Or am I going to go back to New York? And so I put everything I could into trying to get a visa and move back to New York. I mean, I fell in love with the city. It was a very easy decision for me, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I really do enjoy New York. I go there, I would say, at least once or twice a year. Big fan.
Yeah, it's
we
not so bad.
We can see why you would be compelled to move.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, but that's really the only reason.
Cool.
I think the first time was really a sabbatical, and then, being here for 6 months, it was another reason to go back.
Not to hit on the head too hard, but I do feel like the sort of attitude that comes with making that decision is a similar attitude that makes one lead, or that... it's like, oh, I feel like I need to do something else, or, oh, I want to go explore something else. And, you know, you kind of get restless and you want to move forward. And so you literally physically move.
You could put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. So talk us through then the last 5 years. What does that look like?
The last 5 years went by so quickly.
One sentence. You only get one. No, I'm just kidding.
I only get one sentence.
I kid.
I briefly started working with a bunch of agencies in New York. That was the first thing. One thing led to another. I got approached from Spotify, and I loved Spotify. I'm using Spotify even now. I still use it at least 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
It's just this thing that is always there, on the go, on the computer.
Yes.
And if there was one product where I could imagine working on full time, because there's always this thing, especially if you like, and you know that both probably, you know, you work on so many different projects and it's really hard for you to make that decision to just work on a single one.
Yeah.
You get bored, right? But for me, Spotify was like, well, you know, there's only very, very few products that I'm using at least 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
And Spotify is one of them. And I would like to help to grow the company, make it better. Just making it better and being selfish about myself, because I wanted to make it better for myself.
Yeah, totally.
In the first place, and then you end up making it better for other people too.
That's great.
Isn't that in some ways what being a leader is, right? Taking the impetus upon yourself to improve or to pioneer, to create something that doesn't exist.
I mean, certainly.
Yeah, I would say. I don't know what a leader is. I mean, you know probably.
I'm not sure that we maybe have a better idea than you. Maybe the more interesting thing is to ask what being a leader means to you personally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's the question?
Yes.
Well, now let's ask it. What does being a leader mean to you personally?
That's like a textbook question. It sounds like, what does a leader mean to you?
Yeah, for sure. This is your interview. This is your, and actually, if you could send your resume over, we'll let you know if you made the cut.
I think you actually briefly mentioned it earlier already. I think for me, being a leader means mostly the internal part of leading my own life and making my own decisions for myself. I don't see it necessarily as like when you look, usually when you look at like what is a leader, or the term of being a leader, you think of someone who stands on top of the hill and a lot of people around it, and they would follow that leader anywhere. I don't necessarily see that being the definition of a leader. For me, like you said, just leading my own life, making my own decisions, mm-hmm. Is being a leader for myself. I know that's
absolutely, yeah.
That's a weird answer. I know.
No. I think it's like super on point. I mean, I want to say really close to every single show we bring up the topic of self-awareness, because so much of this stuff kind of boils back down to it when you talk about creativity and career and life and all those intersections. And I think that this is one of those occasions where really being a leader, I think a lot of it starts with knowledge of oneself and like continually checking in on that and seeking to understand what you really want. Because when you understand what you really want, then maybe you're able to start to see what other people want or what they should want, or what, you know, what, how you can apply what you want to the world or to be, you know, I think it totally starts there. It's really hard to, I think, tell people how to act or like what the right way is, quote unquote, if you have no idea yourself.
Right. To sum it up, probably you could say, you know, leading by example is pretty much what that is.
Yes. And I mean, that's there's a range of styles of leadership and leaders. And I feel like especially in the creative community, but in general, I think the way things are moving, there are more leaders emerging that are of that breed. Because I think at least, you know, I mean, if we talk about like actual like Fortune 500 gigantic corporate level, it's a little bit harder, but especially in creative communities, it's like what matters is the work a lot of times and the attitude and all that stuff. But it's like the creative leaders are the ones who are actually still doing the work, or at least like very heavily involved in it.
Yeah, I think coming from this perspective of being inside an agency and working in a hierarchical system, sort of, there's a difference that emerges pretty quickly between managing people and leading people.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can be a good manager of people and not a good leader, and you can be a good leader and not a good manager. You could be some mixture of the two. But more than anything, the ability to manage people is basically a mechanic that you can learn over time. But being a leader is attitudinal, and it comes to life in more holistic ways and how you act and how you approach work in general.
Absolutely. So
I guess my question to you, Tobias, is as someone who is working on so many different things, do you ever feel a sort of friction between this desire to spread out and explore as many new opportunities and projects as you can and kind of devoting yourself as a leader or in a leading position on a particular product? Is there any sort of like strain or pull between those mindsets, or do they coexist pretty harmoniously for you?
You mean friction between working on many things as opposed to focusing on one?
Yeah, basically.
Or the need, or if I feel the need to sometimes focus on one?
If you feel the need, does it ever, you know, does that create some internal friction? Have you found a way to balance those two philosophies?
I don't feel like I found or I had that friction yet so much. I mean, I feel I get a little bit uneasy when I'm working on one thing for too long. Because I just get bored easily, and that's why I love working on so many different things. Mm-hmm. It depends on the problem that you're working on. There's a little bit of friction because I have to sort of focus on one project a little bit longer because it's a very difficult design problem to solve, for example. Or sometimes you actually have to sit down and you have to write that piece. You can't just jump around all the time. Mm-hmm. You have to finish it. Then there might be a little bit of friction. But usually, I mean, the tasks that I'm working on, they usually stretch, you know, over the course of just a few days or maybe a week maximum. And then I can already work on something new again.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of how I work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, certainly. I mean, I kind of freelance in a lot of spheres as well. And so, like, I'm different things to different people. And so those projects are constantly changing. You know, it's a design project for like 2 weeks. It's like a filmmaking project for a week or a month it's just like all over the place, but it's like so much more interesting to me at least and more engaging. I just feel like I'm constantly engaged because of it.
Yeah, I guess I'll kind of reflect the same question to you quickly, Grant.
Sure.
Like, for instance, you have a leadership role and a very prominent role in Green Room magazine. Yeah. Do you ever feel like there's any, you know, friction caused between your responsibilities to be devoted to that project?
100%. I mean, so like that was part of me resigning from like TEDx Minneapolis because it was just like, I mean, and we don't have to get into this, but this is like even like my recent relationship stuff, which again is sort of out of this realm, but is not so, which is like, I'm not fully in on that. And it's like, I want to be fully in on something. And to me, at least, fully in doesn't mean 100% of the time always engaged in that. But it does mean when I have a desire to be engaged when I am doing that thing. And that I am making a significant contribution that merits, you know, not even title, but just like the amount of influence I'm having on something. So it's like technically I was like creative director for TEDx Minneapolis. And I did that for like almost 2 years, I feel like. And it just kind of got to the point where I was like, I don't think I have the motivation to do this as much as it does. It necessitates, you know, motivation or
there's a responsibility that you have to the project.
I still feel that with Green Room sometimes, just because it's like that. It's a very hungry group of people, a very talented group of people, and I do feel a need to cultivate that and to manage that in some ways, and to, you know, actually create stuff. So I think I'm okay there, but I have like struggled with that. It's just like, oh, am I giving enough to this thing? But I think everyone involved in that project, in this example at least, it's like everyone involved in that project, it's not like we have like one foot in, but we all have so much other stuff that it's like we're all doing the best we can. Yeah, there is an understanding.
Sure.
And it's also like I've been around that for like 2.5 years or something, which is crazy. But so it's not like I like bought myself some leash, but it's like I'm like, you know, it's a long game for us. It's not like a sprint at this point.
Yeah, I can identify with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you feel like you're a leader on your particular projects? Like, I mean, I guess you have to be in some ways, right?
I guess, yeah. It's so hard because I really don't. It's so hard to understand or have my own definition of that word.
Yeah.
But well, if you ask like that, yes. I mean, I'm definitely the initiator.
Yeah.
I initiate those projects and I try to push them. And there's also a team involved in most of them, in pretty much all of them. I don't work on any, none of those projects I work by myself.
Mm-hmm. So do you ever feel this burden of responsibility to a project? And has that ever caused either internal hurdles or external friction?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it kind of goes without saying, but is there maybe an example of how you've come to learn to overcome it in your time as a leader, or is it something you still deal with every time as something new?
I mean, there's, one thing that I try to do is, if that answers the question, is that if I work on self-initiated projects and I have other people involved, I usually involve them as a partner. And in most cases, I involve them as a equal partner, which just splits the responsibility. Of course, you will eventually end up having discussions because, one person invests more time than the other. And that's where there's friction for sure. But that's usually the strategy that I try to follow in order to just split the responsibility equally, around those partners.
Same. I mean, I've talked about this on the show before where, like, I have a bunch of projects at one time, and I even have some, like, I have a lot of potential projects at one time, and sometimes I won't really go in on one until I've found the right partner. Because oftentimes, like, I don't have very many solo projects just because of, just the energy, and it's more fun to work with people, it's better oftentimes.
Creates a better product in the end, too.
Yeah, and so for a myriad of reasons, but oftentimes I'm sort of like pitching little ideas or little things until I find the right person for it. And then it's like, once I have that, that's something I didn't do, I feel like, maybe 4 years ago, but the past like 2 years, especially, like, including someone as an equal partner. And I think part of that is just getting over this idea of credit and getting over like over controlling and really empowering people to do stuff with you, which is the best. Because when you do that, when you have like a true partnership, I mean, even like Vince is a great example. Vince and I doing this podcast. If I had to do this podcast alone, I don't know. I don't think it would be as good. I don't think I would do it as often, and it might not still be going, But I found the right partner, and it continues, and it blossoms for it.
Yeah. Thank you, Vince.
Hey, thank you, Tobias, and thank you, Grant. That was really heartwarming for you to say. I couldn't ask for a better co-host. That's a great answer to that question.
I'm kind of curious because we're going on this vein. Like, a lot of my, I feel like a lot of my time, energy, a lot of it kind of revolves around like freedom and the ability to do multiple things. Especially we're talking about multiple projects, like, freedom and liberty in these ways is really important. And that's one reason I kind of went away from building, which it sounds like you too, but building like a studio or an agency. And I started to go sort of more solo and contract and like pull in partners and collaborate in that way. Did you feel like you were on the hook in that way as a leader with people at Spotify? Was that part of your reason for kind of going off into this new venture, or like how does that work for you?
Did we mention that that I left Spotify?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, for Semplice.
Sure.
Yeah,
okay.
Did.
I just wasn't sure, just for the listener.
Yeah. I think we did. I know we were ripping.
We kind of glazed over.
Probably. Yes.
Yeah, seven weeks now, you said?
Yeah, it's about 7 weeks now. That was definitely a reason. And I mean, you have to understand probably a little bit more of my background, and I try to write about that as well for those who are interested. And I had never ever had a real full-time job, because I'm just a horrible employee. I'm not one of those people.
Hey, join the club, Tobias.
yeah, it looks like I'm around the right people here.
Yeah. Well.
So before I worked for Spotify, I had my own design studio, so that was full freedom in a way. Besides that, I worked for mostly clients, but still, you have a lot of freedom around how you manage your time. Mm-hmm. And then Spotify was a fantastic experience. It's a great company. It's a great product. I love them all, but it was just too restricting for myself. I just don't really fit into the full time employee kind of thing. So that, back to your question, that definitely played a huge role. I just wanted to be free again, and just working at my own. For me, it's very important to work at my own pace, at my own speed. That makes me most happy, and I'm actually more productive that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're underlying one of the critical pieces of strife in leadership, or in leaderhood, maybe is a better way to put it, is that leaders by definition want to be pioneers, and they want to go into the new, and they want to explore, and that doesn't always jive so well with having a lot of people under you as a responsibility.
That is sort of the difference, though, it seems like, between a leader and a manager, or maybe like the hybrid version, which is, you know, the leader at a company who is sort of behest to the needs of the company and the structure and the schedule and the people and the reporting. But one can lead and pioneer, quote unquote, not on your own, but sort of close.
Yeah.
And I was whispering over here, kindred spirits. Like, that's definitely my vibe too.
Well, you can, I do believe that you can do both. I don't necessarily say that these are two opposite sides, right? Like, you can either be a manager at a company or you're a leader and you like to be by yourself. I really believe that it's, because I know great leaders and great managers that work at companies are, at a full-time position. I think it's just more of it's a personal thing. For me, it's very, very personal. For me, risk and having the feeling of, constantly balancing on my toes is a very important feeling for myself. That's how I grow. That's what I'm interested in. Being comfortable is like the worst thing that you can imagine. And there's this, I forgot it, but there's this famous quote of, the three most addicting things in life are sugars, carbohydrates, and a monthly salary.
I tweeted that recently. I guess.
Right.
Or like in the last,
And that's pretty much how I feel.
Yeah.
It's the opposite. Like, some people like to feel safe by getting a yearly salary or monthly salary. I feel exactly the opposite. I feel like I'm stagnating and I'm just waiting for the next paycheck. And I know that even if I wouldn't necessarily grow as a person or my skill set or whatsoever, that next paycheck is probably coming. I have to be very, very lazy to not get that next paycheck.
Yeah.
So, and that's a weird feeling. I don't like to feel that, that comfortable. And if you ask me that question and ask me again in 40 years, maybe I will answer differently, but for now I don't like to see,
remind me 40 years.
I'll boomerang it. But I was like morbid, this morbid vision of be like standing like maybe in Austria or somewhere, just like at a gravestone, just whispering.
How do you feel about it now, Tobias? Wow, that's pretty morbid.
My bad. I just had to be frank. I had to be honest with you guys.
It depends like what phase in your life you're in, and
certainly, and that's, I mean, it's a good point to make, and that this is not a black and white discussion in any way, and there's no one definition for leadership or leaderhood, and there's no person that fits a singular definition. It changes over time, and our experiences shape how we see ourselves as leaders, or if we see ourselves as leaders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's one more thing I would like to add is, I think especially today, this time that we're living in right now, there has never been a time where you had more opportunities and options available to work at your own pace and work for yourself, because everything around you is kind of like set up. The infrastructure is kind of done. You don't necessarily need to work full time, and you also don't need to have the goal in mind to build the next big company. You can just work by yourself or like a very, very small team, and everything around you basically is already there. Like all the, the other technology that you would like to build on top of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a pretty cool opportunity,
You did not have that 20 years ago. 20 years ago, it was much, much harder, right?
Yeah.
Just for example, just like, let's take, even if it's just, let's say you have this idea for this company or for this technology company, you want to build that app whatsoever. It was much, much harder to do that 20 years ago because you had to take care of so many things that are also part of the business that you had to do yourself. And nowadays, that is basically
automated,
it's all automated, right? Facebook is taking care of all the authentication. Let's talk from a technical perspective.
Yeah.
Facebook is taking care of all the authentication. Amazon is taking care of all your hosting stuff.
Yeah.
And everything is kind of like, everything is set up. You don't have to do all of those things anymore. Which is amazing.
More than ever, the work, like the actual stuff, is at the forefront, even as a solopreneur or whatever. It's like 90%, let's say, is the work, which is like, I mean, I feel like maybe it was 50 or 60 or 30, like, you know, 10 years ago. It's like
all so the much things other that, stuff. Yeah, all the things that you had to take care of yourself, even if it's, let's say, you know, payment.
If you would
want to do receive money online, you know, you had to do that sort of yourself. Like you had to do the payment solution yourself.
It's so easy now.
You don't have to do that anymore, right? Yeah. It's all taken care of.
But I will say that this isn't an actual place I want to live in. But I feel like someone who would maybe wax poetic about the good old times would say that. All right, let's just say filmmaking as an example. Like now it's wide open. If you want it, you can. You can make your stuff. You can get it funded. You can go online. You know, I mean, just like almost every industry, right? But there also were systems in place to elevate the talent, and that you could almost rely on. It's like a lot of the great directors, you know, the people I look up to. It's like, you know, they were kind of biding their time. They kept working, and eventually, is like, I mean, I guess it's not so different from now in that regard. But it was almost like, I want to say safer. It was just set up. It was just set up, and it was like,
you mean,
Well, so I guess what I'm trying to say is that now there's more opportunity because there's a democratization of stuff.
Fewer barriers.
Yeah. You can get your stuff out.
It's in your hands.
Yeah, and I'm saying it like it kind of was the same. I guess it was just almost less competitive. You know, I think that's what I'm getting at, is that it was less competitive because there were these systems in place.
But you had to play along those systems.
Yeah. But right? I think less people did because it was less clear how to even play the games. And so it wasn't good by any means, but I do think it was like clearer for the people who were playing.
The path ahead was maybe a little, it was a little easier to see.
A little more direct, that's all. Now I think the path is just, there's so much more opportunity, but it's perhaps a little bit more to the right, a little bit more to the left,
It's the Wild West in a lot of ways.
Exactly.
It's a little more the Wild West, yeah.
It's exciting. It's the best.
And it's exciting. It's great because now it actually relies on you as a person, as a leader, as you would probably say.
Yeah.
Yes, I certainly would.
And before, that was not necessarily the case, you know, because you had to, like, let's take the filmmaker as an example. You had to play along the rules, and you had to have a lot of luck and connections, and you had to, you know, kind of like play with a network. And now you can just go to YouTube, and you have the audience right in front of you. Is it easier? No. Is probably harder? I don't know.
I think that is the thing, right? It seems easier, but it's like it's not.
It's certainly not, but it's definitely. but now it is. I think the main difference is it is in your hands.
Yeah.
Where before it was not in your hands. Before it was in someone else's hand, who would be like, "Oh yeah, okay, you're in. You know, you're permission. In. We let you into based. Hollywood."
I mean, that's what it is. It was permission-based society versus now it's you grant yourself permission, and you're the one who sort of gets to say yes or no if you really want to chase that.
And that's exciting. And as you said, sure, there's certainly more competition.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe there was exactly the same amount of competition before. Yeah. You just didn't know about it.
Yeah, you just couldn't see it, right? I mean, it's true.
Yeah, that's the other way to think about it.
The funny thing is, whenever I think about competition, it is surprising, like, actually sitting down and doing the work and getting the stuff. It's like, still, there are a lot of people who don't want to take that step. And so it's like, I never feel pressured in that way, just because, especially when you're passionate and you're excited about the stuff, it's not... I don't know. It's different. So it's the best. It's a good time. I feel happy.
Absolutely.
And let's look forward to 10 years from now. Who knows what'll be, what barriers will be removed in that point.
Let's check in with Tobias then.
In 10 years. Yeah. You'll be on episode 472.
10 years. Yeah. All right. I just added that to my calendar.
Great.
I hope this calendar app, Sunrise, I hope you're still around in 10 years.
I'm a fan of Sunrise as well.
Great. Okay, we'll show notes Sunrise. That sounds good.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. It's great.
So we're talking about maybe outliers in a way. We're talking about things that maybe don't appeal to the masses, unique points of view.
Sweet spot, too.
Certainly a sweet spot. Uh-huh. And it's all driving me toward, as always, a food-related topic. I feel like pretty much everything for me can ladder back to food in some way.
Food or drink.
Uh-huh.
Food or drink, yes, especially. This week, we're doing an off-topic topic, about something we love to talk about. And that's delicacies. So every week we have a topic that's not germane to the main topic. Tobias, we're talking about food that maybe doesn't appeal to every palate, but really gets you going personally. What is that food for you, Tobias? What is your delicacy?
Oof.
I love oof. I didn't try it when I was studying.
Now, is that native to Austria?
I guess so.
The oof bun, yes, of course.
Oof. It's great. It's delicious.
and no hands, I believe, in the traditional way you eat it. You just sort of lean
first.
I'm just Googling food, so I get an easy answer.
No, that's okay, here's kind of where I feel like this stemmed from, was I was kind of thinking about just like childhood treats. I was at my parents' home over the weekend, and I was just like having some nostalgic moments. And I was like, what were the childhood treats? Maybe I could start us off. Now that I'm thinking about it, I feel like there was like these like caramel rolls. They were little like 1-2 inch sized, and they're like, I feel like there's some brown sugar in the mix and ooh baby.
I'm kind of visualizing them.
That? Yeah.
Yeah, very sticky, like almost tacky caramel. Oh, okay. Was there some sort of nut that you put on top?
No nuts, which I actually really appreciated. That's kind of not my jam.
Oh really?
Yeah.
All right, fine. Have it your way.
I will. so that, I also feel like there was some like soft baked pretzels that were not really like, perhaps, I don't know. It was
that
like
sounds
a,
really
a
good.
School recipe or something I took back from like second grade and I just fell in love.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds nice. I'll go next because mine's sort of geographically topical. This is something I crave on an every week basis.
Whoa.
It actually haunts me sometimes to maddening degrees. When I studied
Which
in
is the blood of a child. Okay.
When I was in Berlin, I used to eat probably 4 or 5 little buckets of currywurst every week. And to those
it's
who don't,
so good.
Oh my god, it's amazing! It's a little sausage with a thick skin, and they fry it, and it kind of cracks open, and they chop it up, and they put it on top of French fries.
Wow.
And then you put mayonnaise and spicy ketchup on
it. Sort of a Berlin poutine.
Yes, in a lot of ways. And, oh my god, there's nothing quite like it. And just a big pilsner on a cold day, huddling under a heat tent and just eating it.
Mm.
I want some now. I'll want some in a few days. I want it for the rest of my life until I have it. It's pretty serious.
We got to take a pilgrimage. Maybe we can convince Tobias to go with
us.
You know, I can understand that. It's very good. I think I should have answered that. So one thing that I really love when it comes to a dessert is it's called baklava. It's Turkish. Have you heard about it?
Oh yes, I am actually a fan as well.
That thing is amazing. It's just like this sticky honey, I don't know, with a pistachio on top. It's like this layered, you know, how do you call it?
It's flaky. It's kind of like all packed together, so it kind of crumbles apart when you bite it.
Buddy.
But there's a honey like granularity that sticks it all together.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. How do you call that? You know, the layers.
Yeah. I think we call them layers. I would say it's a layered dessert. Yeah,
a layered dessert. Okay, so that's amazing. And then I think I just love Turkish dessert in general. You know, Turkish honey.
Oh,
it's like those cubes.
Yes, I had a lot of those in Berlin as well. They're pretty popular there.
Yeah, they are. So I think that's definitely something. I try to stay away from it as much as I can.
I think I'm following
along on the newsletter, right? And you recently went on the kind of carb-free, sugar-free diet, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think that was the reason why I had a little bit of a hard time answering that right now.
Not a very delicacy-friendly diet, I
know, because I've been on this now for about 3 months. I would say.
Oh, good luck. We talk about leadership,
you know, it's like,
right?
No.
I can't wait till we make it into the newsletter next week when you're like, I'm so sorry, guys, I crumbled.
I violently relapsed. I ate an entire loaf of baklava.
I do cheat sometimes, but I try to stay as much as possible within that diet, which is basically no dairy, no sugars, and no carbs.
Man, I think that would take out quite literally 98% of all the things.
It takes out a lot of stuff. I know. And it's like the eating, but that's what I like. I mean, I love eating, so I sometimes go and cheat, and that's when I eat those things.
Yeah.
Like the Turkish dessert. But in general, like during the week, for example, I'm not a big fan of eating when it just has to serve a purpose of, you know, putting vitamins and just proteins in my body.
Yeah.
And all I want is just answering the question of, you know, what's for food, and I want to do it in the easiest and simplest way because I save time.
Essentially like Soylent, right? I mean, Soylent Green.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I love the diet.
Yeah, that's
because
cool, man.
You just cook in advance. There's nothing exciting about it. You don't get exciting about eating something, and it's just, you just eat it, you know exactly what you eat, and you're done. You know, you don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
Efficiency.
It's more about efficiency, you're right.
In the same way with sex. I'm kidding.
Well, that's no. That was nice.
Great. That's a great segue to what?
That's a great question, Tobias. So what is it a segue to? We like to finish the show the same way each week, and that is by Tobias. We ask two questions. So, Tobias, if you could be so kind as to answer these two in order. The first is, how can our listeners support you? And the second is, if you'd want our listeners to take one thing away from your time on the show, what would you want that to be?
Can you repeat the second one?
Yeah, if you would want our listeners to take one thing away from your time on the show.
Oh, okay. Sure. The first one is, how can the listeners support me, right?
Yeah, what should they do to kind of...
Can I give a pre-plug to your answer? Is I think you should go definitely sign up for your newsletter. I feel like it's like a really generous and like insightful and like kind of just a fun thing to tag along with.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
I mean it. Yeah.
So step one, newsletter, but then what, Tobias?
Step one, you can sign up to my email list. Step two, and that is already a lot, because for me, most of the support comes from people who answer me or send replies based on that newsletter, or people who just reply to me on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for anything else. I just love when people reply to me and tell me their own stories. I love nothing more than getting replies to a particular email that I write with people who took some of the advice and changed something in their life. I mean, I don't necessarily want to tell people to quit their job immediately, but there were a lot of people based on my emails that kind of like found their own passion and started doing something that they would have never done before. So I just love doing that. And that's really the only support that I...
I mean, that's a lot of what we're doing here too, I feel like. Or we're trying to,
Yeah, spread the word. And then, sure, I mean, you can send me some money.
Great, yeah. I want to check out your Instagram too, right?
Yeah, follow along. I feel like you're just like a fun human to follow along with and support and experience with.
Yeah, that's great. I think that would be the only thing. Just follow along and let me know what you think.
Yeah.
The second thing, the main takeaway is, I always love to talk about complaining. And there's this mantra that I have, which is the best way to complain is to make something. And the reason why I would like to mention that is because there's so many people out there, and a lot of friends that I have as well, that are constantly complaining every single day. They complain about their work. They don't like it. They complain about their relationship, whatever it might be. And but none of them actually changes something. So I think the main key takeaway, and I think it comes back to the topic of leadership, is taking the things in your own hand again and not trying to push responsibility onto something else. It's no one is responsible for helping you to live a better life or find your dream job. It's all only in your hands. No one is responsible for doing that. No one. It's only just you. And I always try to remind myself as well, because sometimes we go into this comfortable situation where we feel like the world or everyone around us owes us something, which is completely wrong, right?
I think we'd both agree, yeah.
No one owes us anything. So I think I can go off for like hours. Well, but
you're welcome to. To piggyback a little bit, I think that idea that you're talking about, which is to take control and to really, the first step in that is acknowledging things as they are, or at least acknowledging your own perspective as you see it, and kind of coming to terms with that. And that, you know, again, back to self-awareness, but that is like the scariest and the most empowering thing. is to say like, oh, you know, not only does the world not owe me anything, like the world like doesn't care. No one gives a shit about you. Exactly. Like I'm the only one who kind of has this. I mean, there are people who are involved with me in my life, and of course, but like I'm the real one who has a stake in this. And I think that that idea is what has led me to talk a lot about like, you know, following your path. And like, you know, it sucks for a second because it's really just like what we were talking about before when I think of, you know, how things were 20, 30, 40 X, you know, years ago, which is, you know, they maybe were a bit more linear and a bit more obvious and a bit more controlled. And like, because we live in this wide open plane, it's scary because you can move in any direction. So which direction will you go?
But, exactly.
But taking that step and then taking the next step and the next step and the next step is like incredibly exciting. And the kind of fucked thing about it is you realize like, oh, there is no sort of, you know, in a wide open field of kind of the playing field that we have now, especially, there is no final destination necessarily. There might be kind of wayfinders and guiding points, but there is no final destination. And so like the work never ends. It's ongoing. And that is like a scary realization, but it's so empowering. And it, I think it keeps you perhaps more engaged in the stuff you're doing now. And it's the best. I love it. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, I think you have to find a little bit of the excitement in suffering, I would say.
Hmm.
I mean, Masochism. That's a little bit. I mean, that's at least something that excites me because that's kind of like the pain that makes you feel alive. And that's why I like taking risks, for example, or starting over with something and not having necessarily an idea of what I want to do. And I just do it. I mean, all of us, or at least most of us, I would say, I mean, we're pretty lucky and we have a lot of freedom. I mean, none of us necessarily has to fear of living under the bridge necessarily. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So like the risk, every time we talk about risk taking, it's almost like, you know, I mean, I'm not... Yeah, exactly. I mean, what's the worst case scenario that can happen? So there's not that much, and we're fairly privileged, at least. And I'm, you know, who I'm talking about.
I mean, probably, you know, anyone listening to this,
right? I would probably say most. Yeah, anyone listening to this does not necessarily. When we talk about risk taking, it's not necessarily a big risk. I don't think so.
Yeah. So accepting that is sort of liberating. It's like, oh, wait, this matters so much to me, but wait, it kind of doesn't.
Right. And I think coming to that understanding, to kind of bring things full circle, is part of the way that I define being a leader.
Yeah.
And it's a willingness to sacrifice, to create solutions instead of just identifying problems. And it's the ability to kind of divorce yourself from a worst case scenario mentality and to understand that as long as you go in with clear direction and, you know, a emblazoned heart, things will work out okay in the end.
Jump and a net will appear.
I think we've mentioned that once or twice before.
Absolutely, yeah. And really, really trying to find the joy in the suffering. Because the thing is, there will be suffering for sure, but you just have to enjoy it in a way, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like I always refer to the... you know, when you work out, when you go to the gym, or let's say you haven't been for a while and then you go to the gym and then the next day all your muscles hurt, right? Your body is sore and everything. But for some reason you feel great, right? Even though everything hurts, your body hurts, but you feel great. And that's kind of like the pain that I like in a way, because that makes you feel alive. It's not a bad pain. It's a positive pain because it just gives you that feedback that something is happening, that you're growing, your muscles are growing.
We talk about this a lot. I've been saying, especially I feel like the last like few months, is like putting your face to the flames. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's like if the flames are like reality or like just acknowledging truth, it's like, ooh, putting your face to the flames, you know, your fears, whatever that is, acknowledging that is really hot and really painful for a second, but it's like, wow, you feel fucking alive for a second, and that's good.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Yeah,
absolutely,
man. Thank you for living such an interesting life. I mean, really. And then on top of that, sharing it, I think you're really doing some super cool work. We didn't talk anything about the music stuff, but I really want to riff with you at a later date about that
when we have you back on the show.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll talk to you about that. And on a more practical level, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us. It's been an amazing conversation and it's been a lot of fun. We got one more thing to ask you, if you could.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much for having me as well.
Of course.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Our personal mantra is ship it. And so at the end of every episode, we ask our guests to say ship it for us. So if you would do us the honor of signing us off and shipping us out, Tobias, that would be great.
Yeah, go fucking ship it.